Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be with you here on this Easter Monday, doing an Easter Monday show and a solemnity. Today's a solemnity. I just found out. I didn't even know this. They were explaining Catholic liturgy to me last hour, and every single day for 8 days, Easter included, and Divine Mercy Sunday included, all those 8 days are solemnities of the church. So happy Easter to you. Happy Easter. A special welcome to those who have received their sacraments at Easter. Praise God. Many of you call, I mean, percentage-wise, I'm sure it's not a high percentage because there's millions of people who have been coming into the Catholic Church, but many, many calls this year about people who are on their way in, and praise God and welcome home and all of that. Welcome into the life of the church and the life that only Christ can give in the sacraments. It's a little bit of a mellower flannel panel today. Joe Heschmeyer's here. Chris Check is here. We're all wearing our flannel shirts. But you gentlemen will notice one thing we're leaving out. We're not going to pick on National Public Radio today.
It's true. They get an Easter reprieve.
It's an Easter reprieve. It's an Easter ceasefire that we're having.
Easter Accords.
Yeah, we reached right. Sometimes I wonder if we go too far in our picking on National Public Radio, and then I go listen to National Public Radio again, and I'm like, oh man, they're baiting me into it. But no, not today, not for Easter. We're not picking on National Public Radio. But I did want to let you guys know this, and I don't know if you've heard this at Joe, because I don't know if you've heard it, Chris. But I'm also not sure how much public speaking you've been doing lately. But more and more people coming up to me going, I love the flannel panel. I don't want to brag, but I feel like we might be getting popular. I feel like we're possibly.
I have not had this experience, I'm happy to hear that you have.
Yeah.
You were addressing
recently a
captive audience in a prison somewhere.
I think we are big in prisons, but boy, do they hate National Public Radio in prison. just like people, like, you know, there's always the ones that I always hear about. Tim Staples brought me into the Catholic Church. I love Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Who's Joe Heschmeyer again? Like, oh, there's always the common things that I hear.
Yes, exactly.
And then, this has been added to the list of, oh, I really have been enjoying flannel panel, or I love what you guys do on flannel panel. So, I think we're. One woman told me she's going to tell Joe to stop picking on me. So, you'll be getting
she
that.
She probably
message.
Was just messing with you, and you didn't understand it.
It was a complex diss that I was too dumb to get.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
I recall getting an email, directing me to tell you to quit picking on Joe.
Oh, someone wanted me to stop picking on Joe?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Really? You didn't forward that to me, or did you? And I just ignored it. I don't know. Joe's so much meaner than I am. So much meaner.
It's true.
He's.
I think when we first started, I tried to be nice to you a few times. That didn't work. So I just figured, all right, heel turn, to use the term from wrestling.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I do hope there have been a few occasions where I worried that people took it seriously.
I've said it before. You can tell which viewers do and don't have brothers.
Have brothers, yeah, right. Like, Joe and I have brothers, and so this is how we speak to one another. So
I mean, literally, I've got a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. And the 1-year-old has already learned to, like, make a scary, like, rah, and chase after his brother. And this is how they show love.
Yeah, right.
And they love it. It's, you know, they each practice being dinos towards one another. We don't do that particular thing. That makes for weird radio. But, you know, it's built in.
We were talking last hour about a lot of good Easter news. We got a lot. That's part of why we're not picking on NPR, too. There's just so much good news to cover. And one of the good news is that we came across was in the Telegraph newspaper about the explosion, the resurgence of
Catholicism in Great Britain, which is a good thing. It does not seem to be, part of what this article says is it does not seem to be affecting Anglicanism. There's not a similar resurgence in Anglicanism. And I wonder if this has to do with something you always talk about, Chris. I don't know that we have sociology on this, but Catholic distinctives, that part of what's attractive about the Catholic Church is a willingness to, not go along or something.
Sure. I think in the case of the C of E, the Church of England, it doesn't offer the coherence that this young man found in the Catholic Church. It does offer some aesthetics, I think, but it's past the point where it's a theologically coherent life choice.
Yeah, right. It's too confusing to be Anglican.
Doesn't bear any scrutiny. I would say this of Protestantism generally, but this is one of the great things about the internet. We talked about this last time, where the Mormon said the worst thing that happened to the Mormon Church is the internet. But the deeper you can dig into the origins of the Anglican Church.
There's that problem, right.
Why it even exists to facilitate
a divorce
or an annulment, really, right, is what he was looking for.
Well, there was also just the little matter of giving all the money to your friends.
Yes, sure.
Chasing nuns out of their houses.
Right, and exactly, yeah. Turning the religious out into the street, confiscating their property, giving it to your friends. Yeah.
If I may, just speaking on the... I mean, you've got the moral failings, but... just in terms of the coherence that you were talking about before, the original Articles of Religion for the Church of England after the schism were the so-called 10 Articles in 1536 that then get replaced by the 6 Articles in 1539, the 42 Articles in 1553, and ultimately the current, like the 1571, 39 Articles of Religion. But it's not as if they have different lists of what they believe. The 10 Articles in 1536 affirm transubstantiation. It's Article 4. And the 39 articles in Article 28 denounce transubstantiation, says it's repugnant to the plain words of Scripture, overthrows the nature of a sacrament, and has given occasion to many superstitions. So I always just say you can't be a traditional Anglican. There is no such thing. Because you have to deny one of those things, since they've affirmed and denied the same thing. And it says something about the Anglicans during this period that the leading lights in Anglicanism were willing to affirm and deny the same articles of religion as it suited the political authorities. There's something that's so lacking in just not only just Christian virtue, but basic manly virtue. There's something like the cowardice of a Cranmer or someone is so repulsive, I think, to anyone who just considers this from the perspective of virtue, and that it is hard for someone looking for consistency to look to that and say, "Oh yeah, I want to emulate that."
Right, right.
And when you get a first-rate mind like Edmund Campion, for example, and Elizabeth did everything she could to win him over to her cause because he was brilliant, or more recently a Knox or a Newman or a Knox, and then they start to dig into these. Well, in fact, what are contradictions? Then they're like, okay, well. It's like this is untenable for me.
Yeah. So you can, I wonder.
And
that, sometimes,
and by the way, that's why the thing is. Hardly exists anymore.
Yeah. Right. All right. Right. Although they did develop a beautiful liturgy, and I know that only because so much of it got imported into the
Anglican use,
which is beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, Cranmer, for all of his many faults, was a beautiful writer. Yeah. I mean, you have to give him that.
All right, let me finish this article, and you guys comment as you like. Just interrupt me as you like. But it makes several points from the Telegraph. A very good article, actually, in the Telegraph about why young people are being attracted to the Catholic Church in Great Britain nowadays. A Jesuit, they quote a Jesuit, Father Michael Holman, a former head teacher who now sometimes celebrates the young adult mass. He's noticed that young Catholics talk about the importance of a clear framework for life in the person of Jesus. Confession is very popular with them. as are traditional Catholic practices such as the rosary and adoration, prayer before the consecrated host, which Catholics believe is the real presence of Jesus. Tabitha Smith, a 22-year-old history and theology graduate from Cambridge, now working at the Catholic weekly The Tablet, says that for her, adoration and the rosary are profoundly important, although she also makes use of Catholic apps. My faith is felt most ardently in mystery, especially during the Mass or adoration. I like to think that I'm building a deeper relationship with God at the core of what it is to be Christian, at the foot of the cross. Sometimes, she said, she struggles when faced with other young people hostile to Catholic teaching on issues such as abortion. I often keep opinions to myself, but prayers in my heart for the unborn. Well, she could get arrested for that. Well, Will Mortimer, the gentleman we mentioned earlier, has faced similar difficulties over people's views of what Catholics think of homosexuality. I'm careful about what I say. I weave myself around topics, he said. That's not quite the end of the article, but I want to stop there, see what the two of you thought about all of that.
I think we want to avoid... Oh, so, okay, I guess let me step back a second. There's a long tradition of kind of recusant Catholicism in the UK, where it was when it was illegal to be Catholic because of Protestantism rather than secularism, then there was, I think, this tendency to privately hold on to the faith, but to keep it pretty private for fear of being executed, and very understandable.
Right.
But unfortunately, like, that's still not the full expression of the gospel. Now, you might have to be somewhat discreet at times, depending on the climate in which you're operating. I'm not suggesting, you know, if you're living in a place where Christianity is illegal, that you need to start a very public ministry. You can work secretly, you can work quietly, but work you must. It can't just be a set of opinions you have in your own heart. It has to actually come out in some way, shape, or form. And so I don't want to knock the young people who are clearly coming to the right place and are bearing witness to Christ in this very article. So I don't think that they're guilty of that. I think there's a way of understanding those words to mean you do your Jesus thing privately and we'll do our secular thing and never the twain shall meet. And that's not it. Like, there's more to it that's demanded of us. If that was all it was, then the secular world wouldn't be threatened by Christianity and wouldn't have to work so hard to suppress it.
I just want to add to what Joe has rendered there so beautifully, an invitation to Will Mortimer. Will, get a hold of us here at Catholic Answers. I'm quite serious. And we will furnish you with whatever resource you need so that you can defend the faith with confidence and charity and joy, just the way my colleagues do here at Catholic Answers. And you will be doing the very thing that our Lord asks you to do, which is go make disciples.
I do think it's striking, though, that abortion and homosexuality we can say, oh, well, that's, you know, those are two of the positions people take in the world. But I do believe they've been weaponized against young Christians. I think that the argument for abortion and the argument for an openness to gay marriage and gay adoption and all that stuff has been weaponized in the sense that, well, these things are obviously true and you should and you have to hold on to them. You can't let go of these. Those are what make you a good person, is believing in these things. So this Christianity is false. I think this is quite systematic, actually. I don't think it's accidental that, I mean, the article I'm going to share with you next includes the same topics, particularly homosexuality. Yes. Homosexuality is destroying, or this homosexual agenda. Since about the early 2000s, this very public push to normalize homosexuality, homosexual practice, homosexual life. To normalize it and make it the moral equivalent of heterosexuality, that's what the project is. They're trying to make it the moral equivalent, has been destructive of many young people's faith.
I think, Cy, you're explaining why, in fact, abortion as a weapon, as you've described, is losing its traction. I'm sorry, I just mixed.
Oh, you think so?
I just mixed metaphors there. But nonetheless, I think as among young people, it is losing.
They're starting to understand?
20 years ago, right to choose, et cetera. Everybody knows it's killing a baby now. I mean, everyone knows that.
Right.
So either you're for it or you're not, and that's a small number of people who really are for killing a baby. The so-called gay marriage thing is a little more difficult to, I think, for someone who's not taking the time to think it through. To understand what is disordered about it, because you say, well, look, if two people love each other, they care for each other, and so
love
there's
is
a,
love.
There's a lot of sentiment and emotionalism that's bound up in it. But when people start to understand what love, in fact, is, then this one is going to lose its traction as well.
You think so?
There's an article from 2024. From the New York Times, and the headline is, in a first among Christians, young men are more religious than young women. And there's two takeaways from that. Number one is just what the headline said. I'm going to quote the article. It says, for the first time in modern American history, young men are now more religious than their female peers. They attend services more often and are more likely to identify as religious. Now, that takeaway by itself is worth focusing on, because we often talk about like the problems facing young men, when we should be attuned to what are the problems facing young women that are leading them to fall away from saving faith at an alarming rate. And the article gives an answer to that, that it spoke to a number of young women who said they were either too busy or they felt in their heart that they couldn't be next to people who thought that homosexuality could send you to hell. And so it's very sort of strange thought process of like, oh, well, I don't know what my neighbor is thinking in their heart, so therefore I can't pray next to them. But that kind of thing is prevalent enough that it becomes a sort of shibboleth for acceptability Shibboleth. In the modern world. Shibboleth.
Did I do the breakdown or did I forget to do it? I didn't. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I went too long. I have to break right there. We'll be right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN is everywhere. EWTN radio programming is provided free of charge to over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio stations. It's a great teaching tool for Catholics and non-Catholics alike. For a complete list of EWTN AM and FM stations across America, visit EWTNradio.net. At the bottom of the page, click Affiliates. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Extraordinary, really, what has happened this year. The news about the numbers of people coming into the Catholic Church, and I can tell you anecdotally, Darren noticed this before anyone else I know noticed it. He just said, we're getting more calls from people who are interested in the Catholic faith. We're not getting as many combative calls. We're getting more calls from people who say, I'm either coming in or I'm thinking about coming in or I've got one or two obstacles, but I think, you know, like that's way more common now than that was when I got here 8 years ago. Now, I'm not claiming that my arrival here at Catholic Answers is what turned the tide, although probably it was a major contributor. I'm not claiming that. So we're talking a little bit about that today on the Flannel Panel. Before we go back to that conversation, I would like to ask you, Joe Heschmeyer, what are you doing next May? Not this May, but next May.
2026.
2026, May of 2026. What do you got coming up?
Am I going somewhere in Europe?
Does he know? Have we? Because sometimes Joe gets scheduled on these things and we don't tell him.
Sometimes I do get scheduled unexpectedly. No, I know in spring of 26 that we're going to the Rhine. Is that,
Yes, the Rhine River Cruise. I wanted to take a minute to mention that. Chris Check will be there. Joe Heschmeyer will be there. I will be there. Father Sebastian Walsh, the wonderful Father Sebastian Walsh, the author of the book you probably hear me give away about as much as any, The Secrets from Heaven. He will be our chaplain.
Is he going to wear his flannel cassock?
Oh, we should get him a flannel cassock.
It's not too late to start knitting one if you know how to knit. I don't know if
you can't knit flannel.
Get
that's
Father
not how flannel
Sebastian
works.
Sebastian a flannel cassock.
We've been doing the flannel panel for years, and Joe still doesn't understand flannel. He thinks anything with stripes or squares on it.
The tip of the iceberg. Yeah, I don't know the difference between flannel and
may
plaid.
May I continue our
Please talk about the
commercial.
Rhine River cruise. Yes, do the commercial.
So, my friends, Catholic Answers has chartered the entire riverboat.
And it's like the best one.
It's a great line.
I looked it up. It gets the highest rating of all the riverboats.
It's a beautiful ship, and it's a great line. We begin in Amsterdam. And I know if you look at a map, it looks like we're going down, but we're actually going up.
You're going up the river.
Up river. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then we end in Basel. Here's what I want to say. In addition to Catholic Answers having chartered the entire boat, so everyone on this river boat will be a Catholic Answers friend, someone who loves the work that we do, someone who loves Jesus Christ, just absolutely delightful people to spend 10, 12 days with. This pilgrimage cruise is bespoke. Speaking of knitting,
what a fancy word. We're doing a bespoke cruise.
So the entire itinerary has been customized by us.
Oh, yeah.
Guided heavily by our old friend, dear friend, Father Hugh Barber, who's very familiar with this region. And I know the Danube is quite famous because that Russian guy wrote a song about it and everything, you know? Stravinsky, he's Russian, isn't he?
Oh, the
waltz.
The waltz, yeah.
I know that's a blues song.
I was totally trying to think, Danube. What do I know about the Danube?
But in fact, in history, the Rhine is the more important river. And the Catholic Rhineland is rich in history. And I know everyone is familiar with the progress of Christendom coming up out of Rome, converting the Franks, making its way to England. But then we get to guys like Winfrid or Boniface, and then we start getting across the Rhine and it gets very cloudy in our heads. And yet, this is the region of Boniface, of Charlemagne, of Hildegard of Bingen, and the growth and expansion of the Holy Roman Empire into the Habsburg Empire. This is where Catholic Europe flowers.
Yes,
and the flowering of it is made manifest in some of the most stunning cathedrals. Cologne, I think, is, I don't know, longest, largest, tallest, something. We're going to see magnificent Gothic cathedrals. We're going to have great food. We're going to have wonderful company, beautiful liturgies, a superb chaplain. You don't want to miss this. My friends, the boat is already a quarter sold, and this thing is still more than a year out.
Already a quarter sold.
Yeah.
More than a quarter sold. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because I was surprised at how many people said they're just going to book this early. Because we haven't done a river cruise
since the Danube.
And that was what? That was 8
pre-COVID,
years ago?
Pre-COVID.
Yeah. Go ahead.
CatholicCruise.com.
CatholicCruise.com.
Yep.
You can also do catholic.com/cruise.
Right.
Either one of those will work. But Catholic
or if you forget both those, just call Catholic Answers and we'll tell you everything you want to know. But
also Google Catholic Answers Rhine. Yep. And that will, checked, that also works.
All right, Google. So. Yeah, come with us. The fact that it's the best riverboat, river ship on the Rhine.
Yeah.
Because I looked that up. I did, Chris, yeah. I really did. And that it's entirely taken with a Catholic Answers thing. So you could do talks and stuff on the boat.
We'll have talks of history, theology, spiritual direction. All the land excursions are bespoke.
They're bespoke. And then we'll have mass in these places too. Yes, it's not just like you're going to look at Cologne Cathedral.
Right. We're going to worship in these historic, important to the spread of Christendom to the Germans.
Will we hit Dusseldorf? Yes, we will hit Dusseldorf.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to say it if we don't.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So Catholic. .com/cruise or just Google Catholic Rhine Cruise or Catholic Answers Rhine Cruise or CatholicCruise.com. Check it out.
Join us.
Yeah, come. This is good. Well, this is good work on this.
It's going to be great. Going to be great.
And you don't have to, there's no rowing because we're going upstream, right?
Actually have diesel or petrol or a nuclear power. I think it's nuclear power.
We're going on a nuclear boat up the... You don't want to miss this.
It's green.
Catholic Cruise.
The Hunt for Red May.
All right, I want to just get to the end of this article that we've been reading, because I do want to, this part hits on some of what you've been saying, Chris. For the Jesuits, there's a major challenge remaining when it comes to the young people flocking to Catholicism in Great Britain, getting them involved in working with the poor, visiting prisoners, caring for the sick. Jesus was explicit about this, says Father Jim Conway. These young people are so strong in their faith, but the personal friendship with Jesus is a bit narrow. Father Conway has observed that the young adults he is meeting have demanding careers and are making space for prayer, but they have to realize that their faith means they also need to make time for God in serving others. Spiritual development effectively means sacrifice. As one of them said to me, Father said, they don't have the bandwidth for more. That is our challenge.
I don't know, Father Conway, but he nailed it.
I think it's complicated.
Oh, really?
Meaning, there's a sense in which everything he said there is right on the money, but it depends a lot on what we imagine that this means. Like, some people are called to give their time in a greater way to the corporal works of mercy, to social justice, if you want to put it in that term. And that's good. I'm not knocking that in the slightest. Other people may be called to share the faith principally in other ways. And if you look at the lives of the saints, they don't all run soup kitchens. And that is not a knock against soup kitchens.
Nope.
That this is one of the many ways you can share your faith, one of the many ways you can serve Christ, but it's not the only way.
Let's hit that again when we come back, because I do think there's more to be said about that. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer, I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Flannel Panel continues on Catholic Answers Live. Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
All right, welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Just finishing up some good news. We've been talking about the good news from Great Britain. We're talking about just the good news of the resurrection of the Lord. But I think the good news from lots of parts of Western society that we had seen this de-Christianizing in for a long time, there seems to be an arresting or even reversal of it in some places. And there is a discovery online among young people of the Catholic faith. I think that's great, great news. But just to resolve one controversy we left it on, and then we'll move on to another story that we really do have to get to today. Flannel Panel talks about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective, and there's one we just really would be neglectful if we missed today. But just to resolve, I mean, the laity, it's perfectly fine to be a Catholic whose primary occupation is the raising of children, the sacrifices of married life, the working in the world, all of those things are perfectly fine. But you can't be a Catholic and not serve the poor. Like that's not a, it's not like that's optional. It's not,
I think,
like
Thomas Aquinas says that.
Oh, I'm busy raising a family. I really can't do anything for the poor right now.
Right. I think it's good as long as we understand what we mean by it.
Okay.
And I say that because there was a sort of attempt or shift in theological circles in the 20th century to treat Catholicism sort of like an expression of just social justice activism, and that's it. And that's taking something true, but presenting it in sort of a corrupt way. That absolutely, we're called to serve the poor. Some of us are called to do that in a pretty full-time sort of way, or in a regular, structured, dedicated way where maybe you have a regular ministry, you go and you help in some context. Others are called to do it in a different way completely. And I just want to make sure we're not knocking a bunch of young converts to Catholicism because in their particular state in life, they're very busy, not very wealthy, and you know, have limited means by which they're able to live that out.
Sure.
That doesn't take them off the hook, but it does mean that we want to think about this as broadly as we can. And I just want to give kind of a note of caution on that, I guess.
The note of caution that I want to give, it certainly is both, and I agree with Joe, but the note of caution I want to give is this, especially to the young men who find they are drawn to the Catholic faith, as Will Mortimer said, because of its coherence. So in that word, he's making plain that I have found an intellectual argument that makes sense to me. Now, obviously, he's encountered something deeper in his sacramental life than a mere intellectual argument. But we want to avoid, and this is something especially those of us who work in the field of apologetics need to work very hard to avoid, simply having the Catholic faith be an intellectual exercise and not, as G.K. Chesterton says, a love affair, which is in fact what it is, a love affair with God. So that love affair finds expression, sure, in defending the faith, and maybe some of these people can become RCIA instructors or help with the RCIA class or something like that. But it finds expression in dying to self, in giving away of yourself. So in a marriage is a great way to do it, or as a priest or member of the religious life. But it finds expression in self-giving. So if I'm busy and all I'm doing is reading apologetics articles or listening to podcasts and then doing my job, and maybe I'm even knocking out my beads every day, or maybe I'm a daily mass goer, right? Or maybe I'm opening a bottle of Cabernet once a week to discuss the social justice encyclicals. But if I'm not doing something such as, you know, get married, get involved in some of the work of my parish, then my faith is not seeing the fullness of its expression.
So it does seem to me that the underlying concern has to do with the fact that young people today don't know how to socialize. And
yes.
And being Catholic is a social undertaking.
Yes.
And we need to help them with that. And it does worry me a little bit that, you know, the church in the 1950s was not healthy. And we know that because of what happened to the church in the 1960s and 70s. But it did have institutions like the sodalities and the various organizations people could connect with. And I think a lot of that has been stripped away in many parishes. And I wonder if these young people have something. Like, it can't be like serve the poor and figure out for yourself how to do it. We need to make it easier for them. We need to have a thing where we go, look, what we do here at this parish is we have a St. Vincent de Paul Society, or we have St. Paul Street Evangelization, or we have things for you to do. We can't just tell them to do it. We got to have it for them.
Someone who's really stepped into the vacuum here, I think you've described it well, Cy, is our friend Michael Foley, who has a Trad Starter Kit article on Catholic.com right now, which I recommend to people. But Foley teaches at Baylor. And he and his wife, now I don't know if they still do this, I think they do, but he and his wife hosted frequent and regular gatherings in their home among young Catholics to what? Instruct them in the art of socialization.
Really?
And their marriages that came out of it. Our friend Jacob Imam met Alice at one of these parties at
isn't that beautiful?
Mike Foley's house. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Tim and Valerie Staples did that once.
Yeah.
I don't know, where they just invited young people to come in and meet one another, basically. I mean, you see the statistics most young men under the age of 25 have never asked a young woman on a date.
Sure.
They've used apps. They've texted. They've never faced a young woman and said, you know, would you like to go out Friday night? You know, which is used to be the most normal thing in the world. And then you know, as a male, you just get used to being crushed over and over and over again until some woman gets fooled by your charms and she'll go out with you. But it's a way you learn to socialize. You have conversation. I've been seeing statistics on, they just don't ask young women out anymore.
Can I just offer a quick piece of advice to young men who are thinking of asking a young lady out, a young Catholic lady? Don't lead with, What rite do you attend?
Oh, Lord, leave them alone. That's
not part of your starter kit for the trans starter kit. Yes.
I feel like I learned it from Jason Everett, but I don't remember who said, look, I can't remember. Maybe it was Patrick Madrid. If you're a young man asking a young woman out, there's two reasons why. There's two things that you're supposed to accomplish. And I thought this was quite brilliant, actually. One, you're supposed to make sure she has a good time. And two, you're supposed to get to know her. Those are your two jobs. That's what a date is for. Make sure that
and kind of in that order, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
It's more important.
If you make sure she has a good time, you're more likely to get another chance to get to know her better.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do all the screening stuff right now, that can feel too much like a job interview, and no one's ever been like, "I really enjoy job interviews."
Yeah, right. A date is not a job. It's not a liturgy interview. Like, how do you feel about the Novus Ordo?
Shut up, dude.
That's not what a date is for.
I'm not making that up. That's a real thing that young trad men do. So. TLM.
Well, there's not going to be very many trad babies if they keep it up. I can tell you.
There's a song, a parody song for kind of the Orthodox version of this called Rokor in My Mind, but Not in a Parish. And it's just about guys who are like super into being Orthodox online. But in the words of the song, I'm Rokor in my mind, but not in my parish. My beard's just a dream and my cassock's a wish. I'll fight you on fasting. I'll die on this hill. But my prayer rule's just memes and my zeal's in a spill. So it's just like, you know, you're ready to debate it online, but are you actually living this?
Right.
And that if there's a common thread to, I don't know, the last half hour, it's, yes, you can know all this stuff makes sense on paper, but how are you actually living it out in the real world? How are you serving Christ and others? How are you, you know, embracing your vocational calling? How are you, you know, living out Christianity as such? Are you praying? Are you going to Mass? Are you acting in an incarnate sort of way towards those around you?
Right.
Or is it all just a conceptual kind of world, which is a good starting point, but cannot be the ending point?
Yeah. Yeah. And we, at our age, we need to be involved in our parishes to help construct these things. Like, if you have even a vague memory of what a parish was like in the 1960s or the 1970s, or maybe you even remember the parishes of the 1950s, where there were things that people could plug into, you know? The Knights of Columbus still do this. But they're not going to figure it out on their own. If they've come to Christ, if they've come to the sacraments, we have to help them do the other things. We can't just say, well, you're not really Catholic until you're serving the poor. Well, how exactly am I supposed to do that? Who's doing that I can join with?
I would only push back on the idea that it has to be tied to the parish.
I think we have an
increasing sense that that is not where
life
is lived out in a way that is pretty hard to get around. Like, if you live in one area and you work in another, and your friend group is somewhere else, and you go to Mass in a fourth place, where are you to live this out? It gets a little more complicated.
All right, there's this big story I've been trying to get to now, but I've really enjoyed this conversation, gents. I don't want you to think that I went on too long. I don't feel like we did. This is an important conversation, but a really important Catholic story, especially for those for us living here in the United States. We'll do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on, Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1992. EWTN launches WEWN, the world's largest privately owned shortwave radio facility, to a potential worldwide listening audience of 600 million.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've been trying to keep a positive spin. We haven't been picking on anybody or ridiculing interviewers from National Public Radio or anything, because it's Easter. We have that Easter spirit. And I thank you, gentlemen, for all the great conversation. But we do have to hit something that's a little
bit harder. I can say something positive about NPR before you launch into that.
Please say something positive about NPR.
So I heard a story on NPR yesterday or the day before. And Joe made me think of it when he was talking about his kids pretending to be dinosaurs. Yep. And the story was called Dinosaur Time. And it was a woman describing her need in her life. She recognized to eat more leafy green vegetables. Mm-hmm. So she puts on the soundtrack to Jurassic Park.
Okay.
And stands over the kitchen sink and eats spinach out of the bag. And she calls it Dinosaur Time. And this was a story on NPR.
Look, okay, first of all, the coolest dinosaurs are carnivores. So if you really want to do this, it's not going to be leafy greens. It's going to be raw beef or something.
Yeah, you have to eat raw beef, but you have to like strap your elbows to the sides of your body so you have tiny little hands, little arms. But
the next time you guys hear from me, it's going to be, my wife is really mad at Flannel Panel for making my husband and sons eat raw meat while holding their hands like T-Rex.
You have to play the soundtrack of Jurassic Park in the background while you're doing this.
I think it's good to eat leafy greens, so I'm just going to go with that comment.
I learned that on NPR.
And I don't know about it.
If you Google this, you can find the NPR article with video.
There's video. I am not sure, however, about eating the spinach right out of the bag. Aren't you supposed to wash that
stuff? Well, you can get that double washed. Oh, it's a little more money, yeah.
NPR listeners, they got plenty
of disposable income. I don't think the dinosaurs washed their spinach.
Then look what happened to the dinosaurs. Yes. This is my point.
E. coli wiped out the stegosaurus.
If you're talking about health, you don't use the dinosaurs as your example. All right.
Trim animals, the dinosaurs.
All right. An article, April 9th, Edgar Beltran in The Pillar. Nicaraguan priests must submit homilies for police inspection. Priests must present themselves at police stations for weekly questioning and review of their homilies and activities. He goes on to say the crackdown follows a February statement by the Nicaraguan government, which raised the prospect that the Ortega regime could stop recognizing new episcopal appointments made by the Vatican. According to a Christian Solidarity Worldwide report issued last week, Catholic priests in several dioceses are now required to go to the nearest police station for interrogation on a weekly basis. Some of these priests have said they are assigned a permanent surveillance official and are warned that they cannot leave their community without authorization. This last provision is especially affecting dioceses with large numbers of exiled priests, such as Matagalpa, which have relied on priests from other dioceses coming in on a weekly basis to serve parishes with exiled pastors. In these interrogations, these priests are reportedly being forced to present copies of their homilies to police to verify they do not contain any message critical of the regime. Local outlet La Prensa reported that in other dioceses, priests are not required to go to the police station, but instead the police go to the parishes and ask them for a summary of parochial activities for the week.
That's awful.
This is persecution of the church in our hemisphere, and I want to know what the United States is doing about it. Interestingly, and if you get to the bottom of that article, it's not stopping people from filling the churches. People are still coming to Mass, sometimes we find that persecution is effective, and sometimes it backfires on the regime.
This is a horrible persecution in a country that is very close to the United States. We went through it with Mexico, and we abetted the persecution. We were not helpful to the Mexican Catholics as Americans back in the 1920s. But this is so similar to what happened in Mexico in the 1920s.
It is.
And I don't know. I'm starting to really have negative feelings about communism. I don't know how you two are.
You know, there is a dark irony here that Daniel Ortega was helped by radical left-wing priests and social justice kind of activists in Nicaragua, yeah, and then completely turned on them and did treated them horribly, which should not have been a surprise given the history of kind of this ideology everywhere it's been practiced.
But we have Cuba I think there have been some openings in Cuba, but it's still the same basic communist anti-religious nonsense. We have Venezuela now has gone the same anti-Catholic route. I think there's been some of it in Bolivia, although I really don't know the story of Bolivia, so I should be careful talking about that. But here we have Nicaragua just going full communist, anti-religion, particularly anti-Catholic. I mean, Ortega hates the Catholic Church. It's unquestionable from his comments that he hates Catholics. He hates the whole Catholic thing. And I'll be honest with you, I think he should hate Catholics if he really believes in this atheistic communist stupidity. His deathly enemy is the Catholic Church. He's right about that. His deathly enemy is the Catholic Church.
Yeah, he'll find out that eventually he will lose. I hope he recognizes that before
this side of the veil.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. So just for those who don't know, he was a Sandinista. So anyone familiar with the kind of Sandinista story, if you want to kind of connect the dots.
Any
to
Clash
the story
fans out there?
But you guys, yes.
I mean, God bless the
Clash.
Well,
I'm just thinking, you know, as someone who grew up, I was born in 85, and I was kind of just old enough to be aware that there were all sorts of things being said at our church about, you know, the Sandinistas and kind of glorifying
them
in some parishes.
Yes. So, yes.
And it's something where there were a lot of Catholics, both here and in Latin America, who thought this was a way of living out service to Christ and the poor. You know, very much tying it into the prior conversation that we had. If your understanding of how we live out the gospel, of how we serve the poor, is, well, we need the government to do that for us, that has historically ended quite badly.
All right, so we have talked about this before. I feel like we have an obligation just to talk about it because
I'm not seeing it reported anywhere in the New York Times.
Right.
Wait, no, CNN is the big defender of human rights. Anywhere where there's even the slightest offense against human rights, CNN, so they must be reporting this almost hourly on CNN, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen a single. Maybe they are reporting on it, but I haven't seen.
I've
it.
Not heard and, it on NPR.
And I don't see Anderson Cooper talking about it at night. I don't see him, all up in arms about the end of democracy and dictatorships, and not a word about the Catholics of Nicaragua.
No, it's quite unfortunate.
What do I do as a Catholic in America, Cy?
All right. Well, this is what I wanted to suggest was. Write to the president, the vice president, and to the secretary of state, Marco Rubio.
Two of whom are Catholics.
And one of whom just put out a Catholic Palm Sunday
message. Who was not a Catholic. Yes, yes.
Not a Catholic. I mean, I think that that's a reasonable course of action. I think this is what we're supposed to do is write to our government officials about these things. And so I think it's fair in a respectful way to write to Marco Rubio, the honorable secretary, to the honorable secretary of state of the United States of America. It's very easy to send a letter. You just have to address it, the honorable Marco Rubio, secretary of state of the United States, Washington, D.C., and it will get to him. The post office, if you put the zip code is, I'll have to look it up now. I've forgotten the zip code. I think it's, now I've forgotten it. But you can also send it to the U.S. Department of State. You can find that address.
I've got it.
Oh, 20520. Yeah, there you go. Secretary of State, U.S. Department of State, Washington, D.C., 20520. It will get you. Don't need a building address. You don't need anything like that. I don't know. What would the two of you say? So let's start with Marco Rubio. And then we'll talk about what, if you're going to write to the president and vice president. I feel particularly that we should write to the vice president because he's Catholic and mm-hmm. because he's a Catholic convert. And I think we can appeal to that. But what would you say to
Secretary Rubio? Well, I think with Secretary Marco Rubio, you have both that he's Catholic, or there seems to be. It's, I think, a little bit unclear because he's had some connections with both Catholic and evangelical churches.
Oh, okay.
But he certainly is passionate about Latin America. I mean, it seems like he was brought aboard the administration because of his knowledge and interest in the affairs in Latin America. And he's someone who would be good to appeal to that with, who might actually be familiar with the story surrounding this.
Well, he's Cubano, isn't he? Isn't his family Cuban? Or am I wrong about that?
Yes. I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I think maybe you read this or didn't, or we talked about it last time. The bishop in question here where the...
Oh, I can read that part.
Where the diocese is, where the persecution is especially heavy, the bishop is living in exile.
He's in Rome.
But he's still the bishop.
Yeah. Here's what he said. Let's see. The last provision, especially affecting dioceses with large numbers of exile priests, that was in the Diocese of Matagalpa. And then it says here in this article that's in the pillar, that the crackdown comes weeks after Bishop Rolando Alvarez of Matagalpa gave an interview to EWTN, the first in-depth interview since his exile to Rome in January of 2024, in which he stated he would continue in office in exile. I was ordained a bishop for Matagalpa. I am the visible head of the church in Matagalpa and the apostolic administrator of the neighboring dioceses of Esteli. Neighboring diocese of Esteli. And will continue being until God wills it. The Nicaraguan regime responded to the interview 2 days later, calling it an attack on Nicaraguan sovereignty by the Vatican's website and platforms. So there is a bishop there, but he's in Rome.
Yeah. I mean, there's a longstanding pattern of this, of secular authorities trying to crack down on the church by not allowing bishops to tend to their flock. And this is one of the most brazen violations of, if you want to call it, religious freedom, certainly the rights of the church.
Right.
I'm thinking offhand, just, you know, Pope Innocent III dealt with this with the English king back at the beginning of the 1200s. So this is nothing new. There, for all the talk of, you know, the church allegedly meddling in politics, that's the standard lie used by secular heads of state to crack down on the church, spiritually tending to the flock, and doing what any good leader would do, which is to remind people that our faith is not just something on Sunday. It does impact how we live, and so it has natural implications for how we view the world. There is an inescapably political element to being a follower of Jesus Christ, which doesn't reduce Christianity to a party. But for those who are obsessed with their own party and their own vision of politics, then I can see why it is an affront.
So here's what's coming if Ortega remains in power and he's arranging things so that his wife will succeed him. Yes, he will find his efforts are not as effective as he wishes, so he's liable to ramp up the persecution. And in fact, we don't know that this isn't already going on already. But there will be torture, there will be executions. And the reason we know this is because it happened, as Joe said, really finding widespread expression in the revolution in France in 1789.
Right.
And then in modern times in Russia, in Spain, in Italy during the Risorgimento, and then, as you said, Cy, in Mexico, every now and then a demonic Marxist government makes war on the church, and a lot of martyrs are made. Now, thanks be to God, right, for martyrs. But this, my friends, is what's coming in Nicaragua, a country where the United States could have some influence.
Most certainly could have some influence. So please do write to Marco Rubio, Secretary of State of the United States, and just express to him that this is a concern to you as an American citizen, as a Catholic, and that you would like to see the United States intervening. Yeah, I don't want to be careful about that word because I don't want a military. We don't need the army to go in.
Well, there's that Monroe Doctrine.
You want that back? and after you have written to the Secretary of State, maybe consider writing to the President of the United States at the White House, Washington, D.C. That's all you have to write on the envelope. Or you can write to the Office of the Vice President, White House, Washington, D.C. Send them those. Happy Easter, gents. It's been happy spending these 2 hours with you.
Christ is risen.
Indeed, he is truly risen.
Truly risen, as he promised.
All right. Peace, brothers. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow for a solemnity right here at Catholic Answers Live.